Where were you actually living? And what sort of accommodation did you have once you arrived in Gibraltar? Then you go to the Spaniard border, and you go to the Mediterranean end. So you had the drop, which they built a little wall, a concrete wall, to keep the sand on the airfield and separate it from the beach, which was a shingly beach, and it would only be about 4 feet drop. And then there was a water which was tidal. Our accommodation was huts right up alongside the perimeter. And well, that's all they were. Just
were they the standard huts?
Yes, the standard huts. Yes, accommodate up to about 20. But my particular point of place was that there was two had been bonded together. And they'd taken the partition away, and we finished up with about 40 people. And the sleeping arrangements was double deck. So you had these...
You were in bunks?
Bunks, yes. Two-stage, you know, upper and lower. And I was up at the... I preferred the upper one. And I was near the door, and so I was an early riser then, and an early to bed. So frequently I was called out to my bed, will you shut the lights off, you know, switch the lights off. Because we had electricity there, but no radio. And so I got annoyed with this, and I eventually fitted up a string arrangement from the switch over to my bed, and I could pull it.
So you could switch off from...
I could switch off, but I could switch on. Oh. And so that worked without me having to get out of the top bunk.
What about the food in Gibraltar? Was it any different to the food elsewhere?
Yes, entirely different. You didn't see bread once a week. It was hardtack biscuits. And we were using up supplies, I think, which was from the First World War. I was... Because the cookhouse was pressed for doing something... Well, we had to open up tins of butter. And we threw more tins of... And I was a rigger, and so I was taken from that job to open up tins of butter, and these were rancid. Oh. Time after time, rancid. Absolutely stunk. And you'd be lucky if you found a good one. Now, it's the good ones that the cookhouse used. And there was a bottle of... Worcester sauce, and it was dated 1922, the year I was born, so it reminded me of my and there's several things like that, tins of corned beef, and some of those were rancid as well. So how long they'd been I reckon they were using up old stores. And well, maybe the stores weren't getting there from Britain. Because everything was transported by ship, and we were having heavy losses.
But you mentioned that in Gibraltar itself, in the town, in the high street, there were bars and places like that. Could you get anything to eat in the town?
I'm not quite sure what you're wanting from me.
Well, could you go and get a meal in the town outside?
I never did.
You never did?
No. I wasn't for drinking, and I wasn't for going into town. Most of my colleagues would go boozing. I'd much sooner go down to the beach and swim. That was my relaxation. And eventually I did a bit of cheating. If I wanted to go swimming in the first place, then it was just a matter of go to the end of the runway, over the parapet, move away a little bit to one side or the other side of the runway, and you go swimming there. Now, the tide was... only about 4 foot, and the water was invariably warm, and the only time you had to be very careful was that if the wind was off the sea towards the rock, then you had to keep an eye open for jellyfish, and some of them were nasty ones, and this was the your Portuguese jellyfish, and I have been stung, so I know what it's like, and it lasts for 2 or 3 days. So I did that for most of my time, and I used to sunbathe when on my days off. And now knowing the warnings that is given about it, it makes me wonder that I've managed to keep going. But that was my outlet. There was, to the right, underneath the reservoir, the Mediterranean side, it looked as if they'd built a concrete wall up the side of the rock. And apparently this was the water reservoir. Now, just to the left of that, between that reservoir and our airfield, there was a small secluded beach, and it was reserved for the officers and for the few women that was on the rock, which were very limited. While I was in town one time, I bought a pair of shoes, a nice pair of socks, a white towel, and I already had my swimming trunks. And what I used to do was to dress up in this form, because we still had boots there, but I didn't. It was plimsolls most of the time, and I used to do that, and I used to walk around as if I was an officer. I was never challenged, so I used to go to that beach. It was much more secluded and not many people around.
One thing you mentioned is that there were quite a lot of crashes at Gibraltar.
Oh, every week
there was a crash.
Yes,
and
yes.
You mentioned a number of causes, running out of fuel, engines failing, the air currents around the rock and so on.
And well, one example was that, and this was more or less midday, an aircraft apparently was landing right up at the tip of the rock.
Yes.
And the Levant was in action. And that's like a canopy of condensation. And it was a cloud. And he... Do you want to stop?
Carry on.
And he was trying to land. And he actually shut down his engine and pancaked 1,000 feet. And, of course, there was nothing left of that aircraft or the crew. And another case was that, and this was, the control tower was at fault here. They directed an aircraft to go onto the runway, and there was a modern aircraft, and I've forgotten what it was now, landed on top of it. And it pushed the aircraft that was on the runway, and this was when they'd got the extension built.
Yes.
When we first went there, there was no extension.
You mentioned the runway was too short initially.
Yes, initially it was far too short. Mm-hmm. And so they started to blast rock off the frontage of the north front. There would be 4 o'clock, hooters would go, and there would be the explosions, and there would be a rock fall, not a great deal, and that would be trundled through to drop into the bay, because it was fairly shallow. Yeah. And they gradually built up the extension. Now, this was the extension. So there was the aircraft was going onto the extension, and an aircraft was landing at the same time. And it pushed it into the water. So there was fire and disintegrating as well in the water.
Did they have a team to put out fires when aircraft landed? And
No. Another one was Lockheed Hudson. Its undercarriage failed just opposite our patch, as it were, for the aircraft that was parked. And the air crew got out. There was two of them. And they escaped very, very quick. And because the aircraft is made of manganese alloy, it went up like a flare. And I think they use manganese to make these flares. And so, and of course, that set off all the ammunition. And so there was bullets flying all over the place, and we just laid low. And of course, we had some damage, just small damage. But they were lucky to have got out. And invariably, it was aircraft probably collapse the undercarriage to stop them running off the end of the runway.
Yes.
This sort of thing. And one of the most remarkable landing effort I ever saw was that it was the first Mosquito. Now, they come at high speed, apparently, and when he was slowing down and he was obviously going to overshoot into the Mediterranean, he then used his brakes and rudder pedal, and he zigzagged sides one way and then the other way, just like a zigzag down the runway, and he stopped just before he went off the end. That happened all the time. A lot of them were minor.
And what do you think was the most common cause? Was it the state of the runway?
No, the length. The length. Yes.
So
a little bit of overshoot and you're in trouble.
Okay. But you've also got the weather, haven't you? And those air currents in particular. And pilot error must have been a factor in some cases.
Well, the weather was no problem. It was even in the winter time, you've got pleasant days like this. And sometimes, of course, if it was like the monsoon conditions, where you've got very, very heavy rain, sometimes for quite a long time, for a day, everything used to shut down. So it was a question of, it was fair weather flying.
Fair weather flying, not. What about night flying? Was there a lot of night flying from Gibraltar?
Well, we were.
You were.
Where the Lockheed Hudsons were doing the daylight patrols, and we were taking up as they left off. And so, yes, all our aircraft were out. Those that were allocated were out. And it was very rarely they went off before 7 o'clock time, something of that sort.
And where were they patrolling? Were they patrolling the Mediterranean or the Atlantic or both?
Initially, it was the North Atlantic. And I can only assume that they were into this Operation Swamp Part. Keep the whole idea was to keep the submarines below until they had to come up,
and then you'd catch them.
They would be somewhere around, and of course, one aircraft saw it. He would call up his colleagues that was nearby, and they would amalgamate.
You keep up the pressure.
Yes, they really plastered them. In fact, Donitz eventually recalled them. The rate of loss was too high. Now, they did eventually go into the Mediterranean towards the back end of the... more so when they were trying to get the convoys to Malta. And there was, of course, the North African campaign as well. Now, I'll just break off at the one bit and go to the North African campaign, because that was coming first. All of a sudden, we got close to the perimeter where the Gibraltarians and people used to cross over into Spain. There was crates brought, and then there was a team of chaps came in, and out of the crates were taken the aircraft, and these were Spitfires. So they'd been shipped in.
In boxes?
In boxes, yes. And you get engine in one box, and you get the bulk of the aircraft in the other box. There'll be the fuselage down the middle, there'll be a main plane on either side, and these were very well-built boxes, and covered in so that it was waterproof as well. And so they would be unboxed, as it were. Now, these boxes were coming up more than we wanted. More than they were. They didn't know what to do with them. So if there was an extra space wanted for accommodation or anything like that, or not for a living, I mean, but for storage, then a lot of these went over to the admin section for their use. And so the boxes were put to one side. But there was a lot of spare materials there, and it was beautiful wood, planed. You know, it didn't seem right.
Properly finished
and varnished, you know. But once they'd assembled the aircraft. Then, of course, they would take off, and you would hear them out on the Mediterranean side fire the guns. And the whole idea there was to get the guns, to match them up, so that they all fired to a focal point somewhere in front.